And welcome to another edition of Odyssey. We talk about metaphysical topics, ancient mysteries, and unfiltered news of the day. So we have a new time slot. We're on Thursdays. We tape in the morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time, and you can hear us at 9 p.m. tonight. So we have an interesting topic today. We're going to talk about Mount Shasta and the Lemurians, and we have a great guest with us. Welcome, Aaron Rose, to the show from Mount Shasta.
Thank you.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about the town of Mount Shasta. In the West, we're all familiar with Sedona, Arizona. It's very New Age. It's a vortex. Tell me a little bit about Mount Shasta in Northern California.
Well, it's officially called the City of Mount Shasta, and it had previous names before that, but they wanted to change the name to identify with the mountain because there's a mystique about the mountain. People hear the name Mount Shasta, and something resonates within them, and they're drawn to it. And that was the case for me. I moved here knowing very little about it, but just looking for a place to park for a couple of months and ended up staying. And many people do things like that here. It's a small community, about 3,500 people, and it's got, you know, various segments to it. There's a strong Christian element. You know, there's people that have lived here their whole lives and their families before them. The area is actually the poorest county in the whole state. It once was rich with forests and gold mines, and
sure,
most of that's been stripped off, and so there's very little employment, and it's become a little bit of a mecca for people retiring, especially from the Bay Area. They can sell their homes there and buy really nice property here, and so it's just driven up the cost of living and the cost of housing. So a lot of families can't afford to live here anymore because there aren't jobs to support.
Now, if you go to Sedona, there's a lot of New Age types of stores and events and seminars. Is that type of thing going on in Mount Shasta as well?
There is, and also even more so in Ashland, which is just a little over an hour's drive to the north, just over the border into Oregon. But between the two, yeah, there's stuff going on every night of the week. So
that's,
a lot of people like to come here for seminars and things, and there's just many local people. A lot of healers are drawn to live here themselves, and you know, it's a popular place to come and ski in the winter. But people love to experience the mountains, so they love excuses to come here to come to seminars.
Absolutely. Now, I live near Mount Adams, where there's a lot of UFO sightings at the base of the volcano. We all know about James Gilliland, who's on this same network, and he constantly documents that. Now, is Shasta an active volcano, and can you tell me, is there a lot of UFO activity at the base of the volcano there?
Yes and yes. Mount Shasta is classed as an active volcano. It goes off about every 300 or 400 years, and it's due sometime in the next 50 or 100 years, perhaps, on that schedule to have some activity again. And, yeah, people have sightings of all kinds of unusual lights and crafts and things, and this goes on all the time for those that pay attention. A lot of people never look up in the sky, so they never notice what's going on. We also have, seems like, more than our share of chemtrails over our fair area here.
And we do, too, in Portland.
Yeah, there's various speculations of what's going on with that.
But it's odd that they would do chemtrails in a smaller town. I usually hear about it in a big city.
Yeah, well,
that's interesting.
That's a huge topic of what's
it is.
Going
it's
on.
A different topic, right?
Why?
I know. Now, we're going to lead up to the Lemurians, but let's talk about the continent of Lemuria. What I know about it, supposedly, and this is, we're just speculating today. This is all, you know, real-life mystery, legendary speculation stuff that I love to do on this show. And my understanding is about 12,000 years ago, there was a pole shift, and the north and south poles shifted, and the continents of Lemuria in the middle of the Pacific submerged. And some of these intelligent beings knew that it was coming, and they went to a high mountain in Mount Shasta and transferred over there. So what do you know about Lemuria?
Yeah, that is the story. The whole term Lemuria is actually fairly recent. It only came about in the mid-19th century, where paleontologists were trying to come up with a theory how lemurs migrated from Madagascar to India. And so they said maybe there was a continent bridging the Indian Ocean. That's where the name came about. And then in the 1880s, there was a resident of Siskiyou County here in Northern California that wrote a book called A Dweller on Two Planets, or The Dividing of the Way, and he described the secret city inside of Mount Shasta. Now, that was a channeled book, and I believe he was a teenager at the time. And in passing, he mentioned Lemuria in that book. Then in 1925, a writer by the name of Selvius wrote Descendants of Lemuria, a description of an ancient cult in America, and that was published in The Mystic Triangle. And that was entirely about the mystic Lemurian village in Mount Shasta. And he reported that the Lemurian village had been seen through a telescope.
Right.
Then in 1931, a fellow by the name of Servais published a book called Lemuria, the Lost Continent of the Pacific. And that one seems to be the thing that's most responsible for the widespread popularity of the legend of the city in Mount Shasta. So this stuff is fairly recent, but the legends really abound. You know, if you talk to people in the city here, many of them, they won't go out of their way to mention this stuff to you unless you ask around about it. But then if you gain their confidence, they'll start sharing stories. People that have lived here for generations talk about seeing 7-foot-tall people that dressed in white flowing robes generally, although they're sometimes dressed in bright colors too, and they'd come into town and they'd buy kind of unusual items and just pay for it with gold nuggets or gold dust, and always paying with more than what it was worth and not caring about getting any change back.
That blows my mind, because I've been reading the David Hatcher Childress book called Lost Cities of North and Central America.
Oh, yeah.
And he says almost the exact same thing in his book, that these tall, graceful people, they look old, but they're agile, they're graceful, they come into town, and they just put chunks of gold on the counter and take some items that they need.
Mm-hmm.
That is amazing.
Now, I don't hear, current reports of that kind of thing, at least the shopkeepers don't mention it if it's happening. It's interesting. There's a really nice community of businessmen here, because Mount Shasta is a tourist town, basically. And, we have to rely on people coming to spend money here to create the jobs to keep the town afloat. So, the stores kind of cooperate where they don't overlap and compete with each other. They each specialize in their different things. There are 3 bookstores, and they all carry lots of books about Mount Shasta legends. So that's one thing that's special. But
now another thing I've heard is that there's been accounts of people seeing tall people in white robes and sandals, and then they disappear into thin air as people try to approach them. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, apparently, they are third dimensional, like our bodies are, but they can also shift to the 4th dimension, which we're not normally able to see, and so they're just invisible to our eyes. I mean, they don't exist anymore. They're not there. But they also can teleport, so they can physically just move somewhere else instantly. Also, it is reported that, they do still come out perhaps as frequently as ever, but now they try to blend in more, because after World War II, the U.S. military came in with tanks, and people that were here then remember this. They were trying to apparently blast their way into the mountain to get their way into this city. And, the people that actually lived there, sealed the entrances, and, the military wasn't able to break in. But now when they come out through their tunnels and portals, they can shapeshift. So they can become more of a normal height, and they'll dress in blue jeans, and they look just more like anybody else, so you wouldn't necessarily know them.
Okay, now have you ever met any of these Lemurians or anyone you know? Do you have any personal anecdotes about this?
I've got a close friend that's had many interesting experiences. She had a couple of them show up at her home to buy some books and things from her once, and she knows, she's absolutely sure they were Lemurians. She kept, asking them pointedly, and they would never admit it. But, they just paid her with $100 bills, and she's an didn't want change. But these were very tall. They were fairly obvious. Also, she got a phone call from the city of Telos inside Mount Shasta, and this was hard for her to really believe.
That is mind-blowing.
This guy called, and he was really friendly. Now, she makes telepathic contact with them, so she's used to communicating with them, but when she called on the telephone, she says, come on, this is just a prank, right? But the guy had her in stitches. He was very wise, very intelligent, and he told her things that, you know, she wouldn't believe any other, you know, human being on the surface would really know, other than the types of people that live inside the mountain. So by the end of the phone call, she was utterly convinced, and he was calling just to encourage her that they're watching us, they keep monitoring what's going on, who's doing what, and he just wanted to encourage her.
Now, Telos is a legendary city, supposedly way below the base of Mount Shasta. Can you tell us about Telos?
Yeah, one of the early people that went in there claimed that it was 15 miles wide and 20 miles long and 2 miles high, so it's pretty big in there. There have been various people who have reported being inside the mountain. It's not really common because the energies there are quite high. In fact, the whole energies of the whole Mount Shasta area are pretty intense. They tend to bring up your issues, and many people come here to live, and they find it's just a little bit more than they bargained for, and they're not able to stay long term. But people say if you're taken in the mountain, you need to be pretty pure, both of heart and mind and body, or you'll get physically ill. You just won't be able to tolerate being in there. But apparently they've built their own little heaven on earth. They're not as influenced as we are on the surface by perhaps other beings from other places.
Sure.
And so they've been able to evolve peacefully, and well, they went in there with you know, higher technology than we have right now, and what they tell us is that they're waiting until we're ready to accept them, and they'll come out and help us clean up the environment and teach us to live how they do. But they've got everything they need. They don't need to leave there.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I want to remind everybody we're listening to the Odyssey Radio Show, and my guest is Aaron Rose. He has a wonderful website. It's called hoep.org, P as in Paul, hoep.org. Why don't you tell us about some of your products on the website?
Oh, well, HOEP is short for Heaven on Earth Project. And my reason for starting that is that our bodies are made of the dust of the earth. So the first place we can experience heaven on earth is in our physical bodies. So I've had various products and technologies that have come my way that I have needed, and my wife, to help us cleanse and have better physical experiences. And when something's really working for you and making you feel good, you just can't help but share it with others. So we've done that, and it's just kind of evolved into a business. So that's what we're interested in sharing with people, is the real best cutting-edge things that we know of, products from companies that I feel are higher consciousness, coming from a motivation of helping those that really want to go to the highest level they're capable of in this embodiment, go to the next vibrational level, purify your body, kinds of things. And they're not always things that you find in a typical store.
Absolutely. So let's really send our audience over to hoep.org. I wanted to mention one story about a gold prospector. I'm wondering if you're familiar with the story of J.C. Brown. In 1904, he was looking for gold in Mount Shasta, and according to the Childress book, it says he found a man-made tunnel carved into solid rock wall. And then he went into this tunnel, and he found sheets of tempered copper on the walls, and shields hammered from gold hung on the walls, and all these unusual artifacts and statues and strange drawings. Are you familiar with the story?
Yes, yeah, and there are other people that feel that some of those artifacts were brought here from Atlantis, actually, or at least some of them.
Right, and apparently he left, he was pretty scared, and he did not come back until 30 years later. So he finally takes this group on this camping expedition, And the night before they go in the cave, he disappears and is never heard from again.
Right. And the story was that people were so excited about this that they sold their homes and everything. They were ready to just move in.
Wow. So you can confirm that story then. He disappeared that night before he led them into the cave.
Well, I wasn't there myself.
Of course.
I can't verify these things firsthand, but the story sounds believable to me. It does.
Right. And then the esoteric group, the Rosicrucians, have a lot of stories and information about Lemuria, actually. They talk about people who emerge from the story from the forests from time to time, and it's in their documents as well. Are the Rosicrucians active in that area?
I'm sure they are. I don't normally have direct contact with them personally, but they were responsible for bringing forth some of the early material about this.
Right. Now, another person I researched was Professor Larkin. He looked through a telescope, and he found some Oriental-looking buildings with large domes in the trees. This was back in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he went up to Mount Shasta, he was turned away by some mysterious people that didn't want him looking around up there. Are you familiar with that story?
Yes. Yeah. There's the legends. They call these the little people of Mount Shasta. They're about 4 feet tall, and they live on the slopes of the mountain, and they're kind of the guardians. Now, it's interesting. They're described as kind of physical. They're third dimensional, but they're a little higher than that. You could call it like a third and a half dimension.
Okay.
So that's why they can easily make themselves visible and invisible at will. There's also many reports of Bigfoot around here, although there's not a lot of Bigfoot apparently still remaining. But I lived just outside of the city in a building where several of the residents there, both before and after me, had reported having Bigfoot etherically appear right in their apartment.
Really?
Yeah, and extensive conversations with them and so forth. So
Mount Shasta is certainly a magical, mystical area.
It is.
There's a lot going on there.
Sometimes people have dreams, which they are very, very vivid, and they write them out. And so a lot of people feel like they're taken inside the mountain at night in their dreams. And, of course, there's always the question of, when are we really awake? Are we awake when we're sleeping? When we're truly awake to reality? Or
is this a dream?
It's a waking dream here.
So, when this professor went to explore the mountain, you don't feel it was military that was asking him to leave? You feel it was some type of little people, or both?
It could have been either. I have another acquaintance that said that she spent some time at a government installation on apparently the back side of the mountain to us, which would be the north side of the mountain, which there's no roads to go in there, none. And she was taken in by helicopter. That was the only way in, and they had, a compound there and so forth. So there seems to be, actually, I've seen tanks driving up the road that goes up the mountain, and just at dusk, and didn't know what was going on with that. That was just three or four years ago. So the military is, active here, but I don't think they'd try to be too obvious.
Now, I know there's a giant lake in Mount Shasta. Has anything unusual occurred at the lake?
Well, anytime people get away in nature here and meditate, they tend to be more prone to mystical experiences. So, there's all kinds of special places. In fact, the city of Mount Shasta is right on Interstate 5, the main freeway going north-south here on the west coast. And the mountain would be to the east and north of us. But on the other side of the freeway is the eddies, and that's a total different geography. The mountain is several hundred thousand years old. The eddies are millions, tens of millions of years old. They're a whole different geology, a whole different set of plants that grow on them. Some of them don't grow anywhere else in the world. And very few people explore them because the mountain is the thing that draws everybody. And yet here's this other relatively unexplored area, and it's still pretty pristine. It's gorgeous.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful. So there's a lot of little tiny lakes you can climb up to. There's also very close to the city of Mount Shasta here is Black Butte, which is, you know, largely ignored. You see it when you drive by on the highway, but it's only 7,000 feet tall, and the mountain's 14,000, so it dwarfs it. But, you know, Black Butte is said to possibly be a communication center inside of it for the spacecraft that, you know, come and go intergalactically here.
Right. So if people visit Mount Shasta, they have to talk to the locals and find out the best places to go. Now, have you seen any UFOs up close, or do you have friends that have had close encounters and seen really good sightings?
Yeah. I had a friend maybe in the last 2 or 3 weeks. It had a very intense sighting right around dusk. He was just unloading some firewood for the winter, and he looked up and saw this really bright light and a fairly significant size craft, and it traveled across the sky and apparently disappeared into the mountain. And he called me right away. He was so excited.
Absolutely. So we're going to move on and talk about a few more topics in the next 10 minutes. Now, I've had you on before, and you talked about sacred geometry and these metal and copper sculptures that you sell and people can put around their house. Why don't you tell me a bit about this?
Well, sacred geometry is what matter is built on, the golden mean and spirals. And so when you see the Platonic solids and designs made with sacred geometry, there's something that innately resonates within you. So you almost have to see and hold these things to really appreciate them. But, they're beautiful to have, you know, hanging from your ceiling. If you have them on a spinner, they move a lot of energy in the room. And if you sit under them, you definitely have experiences. I'm not prone to strong energetic experiences of products and things, but I definitely feel it when I sit under these things. So that,
sure,
that impressed me. And the same company has a sacred geometry pendants that are quite beautiful. They look, you know, like nice expensive jewelry, only they're not fantastically expensive. They're only $200 or less. They have two sides to them. One that will draw energy up from the earth and connect you to the planetary grid. The other side is the higher connection, the more cosmic connection, and connects you to your higher purpose. So whichever side you want to amplify, you wear that side towards you, and it'll stimulate creativity or groundedness.
I see. So people can either put these sculptures around their house and meditate under them, or buy the jewelry.
Yeah.
So if they go to hoep.org, they can see pictures of this and get descriptions,
yeah,
which would be great.
Where they can learn more about it, or they can contact me, and I'll be happy to share more with them.
Right. I know some of them are like hexagons and different geometric shapes. What types of experiences do people report when they meditate under them or sleep under them?
A lot of times openings of their chakras, particularly the crown chakra in the top of the head, a lot of lucid dreaming, creativity, prosperity. There's, some of them have, little places that you can put things inside. So you can put crystals, or you can put your dreams and goals, write them out, and put the paper in there. And, you know, it tends to amplify that and make those things help those things manifest faster in your life.
Ah, well, that's always good. Now, also, you talk about the Arcturians. As those of us who study UFOs know, there's many different types of entities. There's the Greys and the Reptilians, and the Arcturians appear to be a very helpful, high-minded type of UFOs. Why don't you tell me about their messages and how you came in contact with them?
Well, I was helping people publish books once I came to Mount Shasta, and I was contacted by an author that had channeled a lot of material from the Arcturians and said, you know, these are benevolent ETs that are here to help us evolve. And so he asked me to help format this and publish some books for him, which I did. And you know, he still travels around different places and does channeling, and this is kind of an ongoing thing. He's got a group called the Group of 40, which is people that gather in different areas, and they have, you know, monthly meditations and things, and you know, it's progressing for him. But it's a thing that not everyone's going to be drawn to, and those that are, they love it. They just can't get enough of it.
So what is the basic message of the Arcturians? How are they helping the planet, or what do they want to tell us?
Well, we're at a point where, you know, we're moving to the next, to a higher dimension. The Earth is, and the question is humanity going to go with?
Right.
Or are we going to stay behind or be sent somewhere else? That's kind of the choices we have. You know, it could be a really fun ride.
Sure.
If we can just relax into the process.
So they're helping with this a big global transition coming up.
Yeah, and there's a lot of assistance available. If you open up and ask for it, you know, these beings are there, but they're prohibited from interfering with us because we have free will here. And so they're just not going to come and make it easy for us without us, you know, inviting them and consciously working with them.
Right. What do the Arcturians look like, and where are they from?
Well, they're fairly tall and slender. You know, they look somewhat like ETs. They're very much humanoid, but you know, they come from the Arcturus system. And actually, in the books, the author of the books, his wife, he channels the material. His wife is an artist, and she gets the pictures, so she paints them, and so she has painted portraits of them.
Okay, and well, that would be really interesting to see. It sounds like they look a bit like the Lemurians.
Well, they may be related. That's possible, yes.
It may be. Now, just in the last few minutes, tell us a bit about the pure coconut oil you sell. You know, I've been using it on my, like, muffins and toast in the morning instead of butter. And so I'm trying to switch over, and I think coconut oil got a bad rap. Don't you agree?
It did for a while because of other competing oils that they pointed out, studies that were done that showed that saturated fats can you know, be linked to heart problems and so forth, cholesterol, higher cholesterol. What they didn't report is that they lead to higher amounts of the good cholesterol and actually lower amounts of the bad cholesterol, and that was suppressed for quite a number of years. It's interesting, I was just reading labels in the grocery store recently, and I noticed that there's a number of products now that are putting coconut oil in their baked goods and things again, and so it's no longer politically incorrect to do so, and I find that really encouraging. But basically, coconut oil is a type of fat that your body burns for fuel. It doesn't store it. You don't get fat eating coconut oil. It's really, I believe, the healthiest fat you can put in or on your body. It's very, very good for your skin. The island peoples that have no other source of oil in their diet except coconut oil, they're out in the sun all the time, and they put coconut oil in their skin. They don't get skin cancer. They don't have wrinkled skin. They got beautiful skin and
really
no heart disease. So, you know, the evidence is pretty clear that it's really not a bad oil for you, and it tastes delicious.
Right, it's a good type of fat. And the last topic I wanted to touch on is we know there's a lot of intense minerals and wonderful, you know, ingredients inside of wheatgrass juice, but a lot of us don't like the taste of the juice. So tell us about the wheatgrass powder you sell.
Yeah, I found a source for a wheatgrass juice powder that I really believe is better than any fresh wheatgrass that you typically can get. You go to a juice bar, you ask for wheatgrass juice, they cut off some grass, you know, it's grown in a plastic tray, it's not even really connected to the earth, there may not even be any soil in the tray, and the stuff's only a week or two old, and it's very sweet, and that kind of turns many people's stomach, and so they say, oh, I don't like wheatgrass, it doesn't agree with me. Well, it is actually healthy for most people, because it's got a lot of chlorophyll and lots of minerals, but the wheatgrass powder that I found is grown in deep soil, fully matured, so it's not just a lot of sugars, but it's got all the amino acids and nutrients developed, and then it's harvested at its peak of nutrition, and processed right there at the edge of the field where it's put under CO2 so it doesn't oxidize. It's kept cold and dried at low temperature, so it's still a living food. It's got the living enzymes. And what I love about it is that it's ready any time, day or night. If you've ever made your own wheatgrass, it's labor intensive to grow it and juice it, and then you got to drink it right away. And the powder's ready any time, day or night. And
yeah, I just put it in juice.
Yeah, and it's inexpensive. It's like less than 30 cents for a 1 ounce shot, and that's a whole lot less than going out and buying the fresh stuff. So to me, it's got no drawbacks, and it's just superior all around.
Absolutely. Well, we touched on a lot of interesting subjects today. If people go up to Mount Shasta, you have a store up there that, where they can visit, or do you point people to the website?
Yeah, my wife and I have a wellness practice, and they're welcome to contact us through the website. We found that carrying high vibrational products has just drawn really unusual, wonderful people into our lives, and so we just really welcome people that want to go to the next level, and we'll be glad to help them any way we can.
Well, we're all going to find out all we can about these Lemurians and all of this wonderful information about Mount Shasta. So everybody go to HOEP, which stands for Heaven on Earth Project, .org. And thanks for coming on the show, Aaron.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Okay, we'll talk later. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, that was another great guest. So we have a few minutes before Candia, my co-host, comes on. She's an intuitive and always has some fascinating subjects to talk about. So I want to remind you, you're listening to Odyssey. My name is Mike Schultz, and I'm the producer of the DVD, The Sands of Time. We really delve into ancient mysteries and all the monuments all around the world, from Stonehenge to Easter Island. And by the way, my research indicates that Easter Island in the South Pacific was kind of the edge of the Lemurian continent. It stretched from Hawaii to Easter Island in the South Pacific. And the Hawaii and Easter Island are the last remnants of this continent of Lemuria. But it's legendary and it's speculative, but that's the type of research I'm uncovering about this lost continent. So if you go to fountainsofyouth.net, you will see the DVD. So just click it on, and it's only $15, and it's a wonderful 90-minute lecture and slideshow. If you're in the Northwest, I'm giving several lectures right before the Christmas season, so I hope that you can attend and join me. I'm also a tarot card reader. I'm a sensitive intuitive, like Candia, my co-host, and I do readings nationwide, so please log on to fountainsofyouth.net, and you can read about tarot. And, you know, tarot can be used for all kinds of purposes. It's any type of situation in your life that is troubling you or you're not certain about, or people who may be angry at you or you're in a fight with, or you lost contact with people and you don't know why they've stopped talking to you from 5 years ago. Tarot can help you delve into these situations and figure out why it happened and what's going on underneath. So it can also, basically tarot points out any area of your life that's unbalanced. If, for instance, you're spending too much time alone, or you're watching too much TV, or you're spending too much money, or you're focused too much on your career, or you're in a bad marriage, anything that's unbalanced in your life, the tarot will pull that to the surface, and it will be really clear when I read for you. It's just it's a real clear scenario. I usually pull 10 cards in the shape of a triangle, and it presents a situation of what is unbalanced in your life. And sometimes it's hard to hold a mirror up to ourselves. We need an outside person to come in and do that. So please go to fountainsofyouth.net and check out my tarot readings. They're half-hour and one-hour sessions nationwide by phone. And I really like helping people find their life path and their life journey and go down the best road that where they can make the most of this lifetime on this planet. So also the archives are up. There's about 7 of them on the site. If you go to bbsradio.com and click on my show Odyssey, you'll see all the different archives. We've had all kinds of great guests. We had Preston the Indigo Child, and he now has his own show, which is great. He's on Thursdays before me. So definitely tune in and listen on Thursdays. He's on every other week. So I wanted to touch on a few more things about my DVD, The Sands of Time. One of the topics I cover is Mohenjo-Daro, which is a lost city in India. And as I was reading their ancient texts, which are called the Vedas and the Ramayana, these really, really old documents, what's interesting is they really get into spacecraft and ETs and how they were flying around in planes and having these aerial dogfights. And I've even uncovered some ancient, you know, temples with drawings of helicopters and submarines and planes, and it's the pictures in my DVD, The Sands of Time. So it's really interesting. It's more confirmation that there was most likely some ET advanced race involved in ancient India, as well as in our part of the world in the West. So that's in my DVD, The Sands of Time, at fountainsofuse.net. And it gets into basically the serpent gods, how they were, you know, part reptile and how they mated with humans. And they were half, kind of a hybrid, an animal-human hybrid, half reptile, half human. And if you're interested in that, you know, the Egyptians also had all types of artwork detailing these hybrids. So I do believe before the flood there were all these different types of genetic variations, and that there were these kind of demigods or deities or custodial gods or whatever you want to call them. But there definitely was this other group before the flood to a great extent, and then after the flood to a lesser extent. We will have Candia joining us any moment, so she'll be calling in. She's an intuitive. She's my new co-host, so that'll be exciting for her to talk for the rest of the show, about 15, 20 minutes. And anyway, so as I delved into these ancient documents, the Vedas and the Ramayana, you can really find out some evidence of ETs and an advanced race. And so back to this city that was built around 3,000 or 4,000 BC, it's called Mohenjo-Daro. And they had really advanced construction. At one part of the city, there's this, it looks like a swimming pool. It's a large public bath, and there's two types of brick or two layers of brick, and then it's encased in limestone, and then it's sealed with tar. And that was way ahead of its time. I mean, back then, people were living in thatched huts. And all of a sudden, you've got this advanced construction of a swimming pool. I mean, it's just one small example, but it's really interesting how it was so far ahead of its time. Mohenjo-Daro had, you can look it up on the web and see all kinds of cool pictures of it. It had streets with well-engineered channels, with drain pipes in the streets, and all sorts of, almost like apartments. You know, they were stacked on top of each other, and it's in ruins now, but you can still see the blueprints or the floor plans or the floor of the city. And they had a specialization in their workforces. They had metalsmithing and jewelry making and goldsmithing and baking kilns and all kinds of stores and shops that were very specialized. Whereas back in 3000 BC, all around the rest of the world, it was all hunter-gatherer tribes. For the most part, that's what the evidence indicates. So all of a sudden, you've got this specialized labor force that was way ahead of its time. So that city's called Mohenjo-Daro, and I get into that. That's one of the six sites that I visit in my Sands of Time DVD. So check out my website, fountainsofuse.net, and buy the DVD. And I've got about 100 pictures from all around the world, including those shots of India. So, like I said, any moment, Candy is coming on. And I want to remind you, we do have a new time slot. We're Thursdays 9 to 10 now. That's Pacific time. So we're the last show of the evening, a good time to wind up your day and talk about all of these metaphysical topics and ancient mysteries. So anyway, one of the other sites that we talk about where there was pyramids was in China. A lot of people are not aware of this, but within central China, there are about 70 or 80 large pyramids, and they don't look like the Egyptian pyramids. They're more like earth mounds, but they're very large, and they're all around this area. And a researcher went there from the West in 1994. His name was Hartwig Hausdorff, and he asked all the Buddhists in the monasteries, and they said that they were not built by the Chinese, that these gods came down and descended and built these pyramids or oversaw the construction of these pyramids. And It's the same story that's told in Egypt and Mexico and South America, that these gods descended from the heavens and created these cities with pyramids, and they're still standing here to this day. There's a mythical pyramid called the Great White Pyramid that is supposedly at the base of Tibet or in the area of Tibet, but Hartwig Hausdorff never quite found it. He heard a lot of legends, but supposedly it's 1,000 feet high and it's white. And, you know, there's witnesses to it, but he couldn't really verify how to nail it down. But it's certainly interesting to speculate about this. So all these pyramids are, I have some pictures of them on my DVD, The Sands of Time. And they're grouped around central China in this area. So it's hard sometimes to get research because it's a communist country. You know, but we are able to bring in researchers from the West from time to time and uncover all of this hidden information from the public. So that's one of the other areas in the world where you can find pyramids. And, of course, the Great Pyramids of Giza are located in Egypt, and that's the third area. So it's Egypt, India, China, and then the other three areas are Mexico, South America, and Persia. And in Mexico, they're all throughout the southern region, the Aztec and Mayan empires, but they were built way before the Aztecs and the Mayans. These Indians basically found them there and just started living amongst the pyramids. They did not build them themselves, nor do they claim to. So they were much older. And there's pyramids all around the Yucatan Peninsula, and probably the most famous one is called Chichen Itza. And it's a very large stone pyramid. And if Candy is on, let us know. Otherwise, I will keep telling you about these ancient monuments.
Good morning.
Oh, hi, Candy. I'm going to let you take the show away, all right?
Oh, it sounds great. I'm sorry I missed part of it. This sounds awesome.
Okay, cool. Well, you'll have to hear the archive. And here's Candy Sanders for the rest of Odyssey. Take it away, Candy.
Thank you. You know, Mike had some great information, and what's really fun, he's done a lot of the groundwork work, the footwork out there, and obviously this is not necessarily where I was going to go this morning, but after listening to that, it's really fun to think about it from my view, being an intuitive, and seeing the world from a little bit different slant, and where these different cultures arrived. Of course, I take it one step further, that on one level of existence, all of those civilizations are still alive and still living out their lifestyles, their quality of life, their existences on one different probability. So in terms of the gods, were they gods or were they creator beings? There are so many speculations on where these civilizations all came into being. And from my view, I feel that there is so much more than we could even begin to grasp. For example, not in necessarily relationship to the civilization, but in terms of lifetimes and existences between individuals. I was talking with another intuitive, and so we were comparing what she gets intuitively and what I get intuitively, and I feel that we have many, many parallel existences that are happening right now, because time grid is all right now versus past and present, even though I know that's very difficult for our simple earthbound minds to wrap around. And then I feel that also not only are we simultaneously happening in different lifetimes, I feel that we can be in more than one body at this time frame. So you could be having an aspect of yourself on the other side of the planet as a child. Now this is where it gets very complicated, and it's very difficult for us to go, wow, I really get that concept. However, when I do readings for people, invariably something like that will crop up, and somebody will say, well, you told me there was already a lifetime in that particular time frame, for example, 1800s. Well, it's just because the soul has chosen to live in more than one existence, more than one civilization at that time frame, because that time frame actually offers incredible opportunities for the soul to grow, because obviously that's why we're here on the planet. When I do readings, I look at all aspects of what's going on for a person, because the main reasons people come to me is for health, number one, relationships, career. Those are the biggies. Those are absolutely the biggies, because career obviously has to do with our abundance, relationships have to do with our heart. And then you combine all of those with our health because they all influence our health. If we're not happy individuals, it then compounds our health issues. I haven't seen one issue when it comes to health that has not related on some level, some place, to emotions. I recognize that our regular medicine out there does not believe in that, but there is always an underlying emotional issue if there's been a chronic type of condition. Now, of course, you can walk down the road and accidentally trip on a stick and scrape your knee and get up, and away it goes, and it heals in 2 days. To me, I don't feel like that's anything big. I feel that's just being on the planet. To me, though, if that knee then continued to fester and then swell and not get better, and 3 months later it's still bad, 6 months later, then something is going on underneath that caused it. Somewhere in your psyche you set that up for that to happen. That's when it gets interesting, when you start looking at people's souls, when you look at their lifetime experiences, their family patterns, as to what sets all of this up. The first thing I do when I have some call me or come see me, we go into the original concept of where they came from, and I look at the frequencies and energies around a person to see just exactly what works, what doesn't work. Because what happens is within the frequencies around the body, and some people can call that the auric field, and I would agree with that. I also see the colors around someone's body. Within that energy field around someone is where so much of the emotional heaviness can get kind of stuck, and then it influences our physical body. Then, of course, well, I'm getting ahead of myself because I can also see it within the physical body too. But within the fields around us, what can show up are the patterns that come to us via our bloodlines, okay? What that means is instead of a genetic pattern of acting out within the body, it's more of an emotional reactionary state that gets carried down the bloodlines from both our father's side and our mother's side, and how those then influence who we are today in our emotional reactions. And literally, and I mean the word reactions versus acting consciously, and how we can get stuck in patterns of how we respond to things based on these old memories that are literally in the bloodlines. Now, I see it in the cells. I can go into, and I know this sounds out there for some people, but again, for those who are listening to this, a lot of people are aware of the DNA patterning and the cellular memories that come to us. A lot of people don't even believe in other lifetimes. They believe it's all ancestral anyway. And so if you look at it that way, those memories are then are carried through us on the bloodline anyway. So there are many different avenues of belief around this, and I feel probably on some level they are all correct. I mean, I believe that there is so much more. Again, like I started at the first, I think there are so many things that we haven't been able to see or we're not seeing that, again, there are many roads to the top of the hill. There are many aspects of what we look at that all are true. For example, I'll get back to the frequencies. I was reading about Einstein's theory versus of energy, mass, and the huge, you know, the time frame all being now, and the speed of light, and how that then is against, and that's the universe expanding versus quantum theory, which is very tiny, and how science is bringing those two concepts together. Now, I have to say, when it comes to metaphysical concepts, I can talk up one side, down the other when I'm trying to explain scientific facts. I think my head doesn't go as clearly, but what it's saying is that they're two diametrically opposing theories, and yet they are coming to a place now where they can agree, and I feel that some of that is where string theory comes in, which goes into alternate dimensions. Now, anyway, that goes into back to where I was within the frequencies of the cellular bloodlines, because there are many aspects of how people look at this, and I feel probably on that there is a piece of truth in each of it. So when I read someone, I literally can see memories that get stored up that could be 6 or 7 generations deep. For example, what I can see are the concept of victim mentality that gets transferred from generation after generation. Now, each generation can manifest that belief a little bit differently, but those memories that get stored on the blood literally will show up within the cells, and then, again, that person's their belief pattern gets locked into that, because then as children, we get to watch our parents interact, and then so they're living out these memories of victim mentality, or lack of self-worth, or lack of self-esteem, or life is drudgery, life is hell. That's another one that I see. You know, it's you can never rise above the, it's like keeping your nose above water. You can never rise above. It's really sad. I was working with a woman just yesterday about this, and what's amazing is that how it's affected her belief system. She's going, I don't know where this is coming from, and it is literally coming to her from her family lineage. And even when the family is not aware of where, you know, their family came from, could be orphaned or whatever, those bloodline patterns are still embedded in our own cells. So not only if you're adopted, not only will you be getting information stored in your blood from your family, you will also then pick up the belief patterns of your adopted family. Well, those patterns then show up within the fields around our physical body. When that happens, that can influence our health. So you want to go back in, and from my view, as I go in and look at those, and we remove those blocks and those patterns so that you can be more free and more clear to act consciously instead of reacting to old patterns of belief. Now, to me, this is one of the really big issues that we have with our health. This is what, to me, is a real big stumbling block that gets carried down, and then our body goes into overload from the stress and stimuli that surround us every day and impacts us, and then we have these memories that then kind of override our reactions to things. And I'll give an example. Another example of that is if someone has had a stomach issue, and it could be a multitude of issues. It could be a digestive issue. It could be acid reflux. It could even go as far as going into cancer. I don't usually go that far, but anyway, when that shows up, some of that could be coming within the chakra of that area of a memory pattern that comes to them from their family of what's eating at me, where do I hold all my stress? And you have to go back into the patterns of where these beliefs originated from within the family, find those, let those patterns go, because, again, as we started at the first of this, all time is simultaneous, so whatever we're doing now with an individual, let's say I'm working with you individually, what we are working on with you individually will help the family, because even if it's your great-great-grandmother where the original patterns got started of belief, she, on some level, is still alive on the parallel existence of all time now, not to mention the oversoul. So, I mean, it gets so complicated, but it's so much fun because every day when I have this incredible opportunity to work with people, I learn something new. I have, I'm in great gratitude and amazement when I have the ability to read somebody's higher self. It's like, boy, I couldn't make this stuff up if I wanted to. But what's so much fun is that whatever I do with someone and we work together, we're not only affecting his or her health, we are affecting the bloodlines. And wherever those people are, it is affected at that time frame too. That goes back into this whole consciousness of us as all time is now, that we are this ever-evolving, expanding universe, because every time we affect the time frame, the time-space continuum, all levels are affected positively, of course negatively too, but I don't go there. I'm one of those eternal optimists. So every time we work together to make things better and improve, we can literally affect all levels, all places, all spaces and time. Now, if you think about that, that gives you incredible power, incredible empowerment, because if you think about wanting to change and affect change in your life, you can help change, you can make differences with your children. You can also affect how your parents are and clear back into your family lineage. Now that to me is really awesome. So from there into the physical body, again, we're still in the frequencies, all of these energies can be held in the space around us. Now, a lot of times people don't have boundaries. You hear that, oh, that woman has no boundaries, you know, and she's always in your face about this or whatever. Well, boundaries literally show up around a physical body as being there or not being there, and that, again, is in the frequencies around us. And, again, I see the frequencies, this energy field around a body. Again, you can go into Carillion photography and see pictures of flowers and rocks and human beings and see the energy field around them. Within that field of energy of light is where, again, we have all these emotions, and if we have no boundaries, all those other energies of the world around us come in and bombard us. They can affect who we are, and then our own physical energies will drop. They will get more tired. They will feel overwhelmed, and you don't even know why. And it's because, again, you haven't set up the boundary of space around you. And then when that happens, it affects all levels. It affects your physical body, it affects your mental body, and it affects your emotional body. When that happens, is then when all levels are affected, when it hits your physical level, that's when the endocrine system really can go upside down and you become more drained and more tired. And what I see on a pretty regular basis is adrenal strain and stress, part of the endocrine system, because those are our little fight or flight glands. And in today's world, when there's so much stress, and then again, if you don't have boundaries, those are the glands that get affected tremendously. And when those get impacted with stress, what that can do is bring down your emotional well-being. And to me, that's a bigger sign out there than what I would call brain chemistry imbalance. In terms of depression, I see it more as an adrenal stress. But again, that goes all the way back to the frequencies of energies around the physical body. That's when it's fascinating. That's when you're going, wow, it's amazing what we have set up for ourselves here on the planet. What you can do is think very clearly about this energy field around you. Put your arms out to your side and reinforce this light of energy around you, and reinforce your boundaries if you feel on some level you're being overwhelmed by other people's energies. Very simple tool and very, very effective. I actually see this happen with more women than I do with men. Men are a little bit better about their boundaries, but that still happens with men as well. So again, you just stretch in the morning, stretch your arms out, and visualize this wonderful field of energy around you, holding up the light around you. And what that does is that gives you that direct space that connects you to source and then grounds you to the planet, that gives you this clarity so that others' emotions and energies don't override you, again, giving your physical, mental, and emotional body space and connection. And that will give you this ability to be healthier and happier in ways that you haven't been able to experience before, again, if your boundaries are down. So something to really assess and think about in your daily life. If you're at work and people's energies seem to overwhelm you, you get stressed when you walk into a room, you go to the grocery store, and everybody's energies overwhelm you, okay, stop, reevaluate, and think about why is this, and where do you allow too many people's energies to come in? Do you say yes too much? Have you forgotten the word no? Very simple word here, no. Remember those things, and then reassess where you are, push your hands out, feel this energy field around you as if you're holding up a wall, and just visually see it. Push that energy out. And when that happens, it again, very simple tool, it will really start to help you feel just happier, just bottom line, happier and more energized. Now, it doesn't get much better than that. I want to thank Mike Schultz for inviting me to join his show, even though I know I took you in a completely different journey than from all the pyramids and energies. I do feel there is great information that is stored on this planet that we have yet to tap into. I will probably take some of his show and tap into that, but also segue out into the intuitive world of health and relationships and abundance, because that's where I live. I do enjoy the archaeology and the mysticism, though, that is found on this planet. So please tune in to Mike. Check out his new video he's got coming out. I think it sounds pretty incredible. I want you all to have a wonderful week. And for those who feel as if you are being overwhelmed, again, think about your own personal boundaries and push out that energy and hold up that light around you and create this space of clarity for yourself. It will change your life. It's very simple, but it will change your life. On those words, again, have a great week, and we look forward to having you tune in to us again next week here on BBS Radio. This is Candia Sanders, and if you want more information, check out my website, candiasanders.com.